are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, May 11th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel. On the Yates hearings. On the Comey firing. On the Flynn subpoenaing. On the Kushnering. Also on the program today, Trump to launch a fraudulent voter fraud commission. Dems ramp up effort for an independent prosecutor. The acting FBI director testifying on the Hill today. And Trump money laundering documents head over to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Meanwhile, the head of the Census Bureau is leaving. How will that impact the 2020 redistricting? And all that and more as we prime the pump this Thursday. I just made that up.
Whoa.
Priming the pump.
I mean, lacking sleep, but not ideas.
No, it just came into my head. We got to prime the pump here.
Just creative like that.
Yeah. the so idea great. that Donald Trump could have thought that he made up that with those words is pretty stunning, because he clearly has never used any type of like chainsaw or snowblower or anything where you actually literally do prime the pump.
Prime the pump. It's what Ivanka does to me every night. What's your problem?
But he also has probably had no conversations with anybody that he's ever listened. I mean, what? The guy's a lunatic. Above all else. But and amusing at moments. So that's, I guess, you know, thank heavens for that.
That sounds like a good obituary.
So obviously we're loaded up with we're talking to Marcy Wheeler. We're focused today, as is many people, on the sort of the state of our government, of the Justice Department. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know who they're going to bring in, but there's a whole raft of issues aside from Donald Trump and his associates' relationship with money laundering, with Russian, whatever it is, that, you know, the head of the FBI is in charge of. Now, granted, we have a head of the DOJ who is a unreconstructed racist, and perhaps even more importantly than what's in his, what he is personally, who is hell-bent on allowing for racist policies.
He's functionally racist.
Yes. In police departments, from disenfranchising people's right to vote, the list would go on. Having an FBI director who is a team player, as it were, is problematic, to say the least, even outside of these other issues. But so we're going to spend some time on that today. I had a long talk with Marcy Wheeler just about 20 minutes ago. But before we get there, what is also important, and really, in many respects, the value of these ongoing investigations, in addition to hopefully leading to a place where Donald Trump doesn't have the ability to run our country, and any of his associates don't either. But it also makes it harder for Paul Ryan et al. To pursue their agenda of stripping people of their health care, of imposing austerity for the sake of tax cuts to the very wealthy. So anything that can contribute to that, I think, is a good thing. But there'll be no replacement for this type of work by voters. This is a video of a town hall in New Jersey's 3rd District where a man tells Republican Tom MacArthur, gives him a little piece of his mind. Remember, MacArthur is the guy from New Jersey who fashioned the so-called compromise, put in the extra $8 billion for the risk pools, which were useless, and the waivers, which again basically allows states to get rid of all of the patient protections, all of the regulation that makes health insurance health insurance. And not only is it a waiver for one state, it's going to allow large group insurers, employers, to basically adopt a state that's not theirs to go for the lowest bar that would qualify health insurance. In other words, you know, Alabama, I don't know why I pick on Alabama, although I think it's a pretty good bet.
I mean, yeah.
Imagine if Alabama said that, well, we're selling car insurance that does not protect, does not provide you any liability if you hit anybody, does not provide you with anything if someone hits you, has a massive deductible, and then will only pay 2/3 of the replacement of any of the parts of your car. We still call it car insurance. And oh, by the way, out-of-state people, employers can buy this insurance, even though in their state they actually require certain minimums for what car insurance is. It would be a problem. That's what we're looking at here. But here is a gentleman who, and this is a district, to be fair, a section, I should say, of Tom MacArthur's district that he did not get a lot of votes. But this anger, I think, is going to resonate outside of this district.
And then suddenly we got the MacArthur Amendment. Congratulations. You're in history now. You're in the national spotlight. And that's one thing I want to talk about, the national spotlight. You keep talking about all the constituents that you have to adhere to. And over in this county, they believe one thing. And over in this county, they believe another thing. And you're trying to thread that needle. Well, you haven't threaded it at all. Everyone that is going to be losing from this, you have not addressed. You have not addressed it properly. You have not addressed it fully. You have ignored us. I have called your office incessantly, and I get people who don't know what's going on. I don't get any return phone calls. If I ever fax or email, I get a form letter that informs me about what I contacted you about and why you can't do anything about it because it's still in committee. You look forward to taking my opinions into consideration. You have not taken my opinions into consideration. Too complicated. It's not going to get done in months. 3 weeks. I don't understand.
What's your question?
Oh, we haven't even begun. I'm not done with you yet. I got the mic, and I'm not going anywhere. Turn off the power. I got a very loud voice. This ain't over yet. My wife was diagnosed with cancer when she was 40 years old. She beat it, but every day, she lives with it. She thinks about it. Every pain, every new something going on somewhere, is it coming back? Is this cancer? Do I have it again? Is it going to kill me this time? Is it going to take me away from my children? Speaking of which, my children both have pre-existing conditions from birth. One cardiac, one thyroid. You have been the single greatest threat to my family in the entire world.
I mean, he goes on, imagine, and it's probably true. I mean, if you've got two kids with pre-existing conditions and a mother who is a survivor of cancer, and you're looking across at the guy who's basically going to make it impossible for you to get health insurance to cover your family. In the event that you lose your job, it would be virtually impossible. It's, I mean, 50% of bankruptcies are going to return. Personal bankruptcies are going to return. That's probably not hyperbole at all. And this has got to keep up. I mean, the Trump stuff is, I think, more compelling from people. On some level, it's more dramatic. But the value of it is to weaken the Republicans' ability to impose their agenda, which is at, you know, their strength, their ability to do that is really about as high as it gets, right? I guess theoretically, if they had filibuster proof in the Senate, but nevertheless, this is important stuff to push back on. So if you have the opportunity to go to the town hall, and I think only about 20 of them, 20 Republicans, I think, are scheduled to have their town halls, and maybe it'll be less over this week and a half. That
not looking too good.
Yeah, no, I would, if I was a Republican, I would be hiding in the bushes. I'd be pulling a Sean Spicer.
I don't want to do any town halls. Sam, Republican Congressman. I voted against their pre-existing conditions. Now they're saying
there's
going to
be
awful things.
I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of things like where, you know, they do it via closed caption, oh, you know, totally. Closed circuit TV. Like the guy's actually going to be in the back room on a.
What was actually great was yesterday we were on Tuesday, we played one with a guy in Iowa who did all this effort to make sure that nobody from out of his district showed up. And first he had a tamper tantrum with a reporter who was like, well, if you'll take contributions outside of your district, why can't you take questions? And he ripped his mic off and walked out. And then we played from the town hall, which he screened heavily. And this woman came up to him and was like, basically, like, why are you going to F people with pre-existing conditions? So it didn't work.
You can't
run. It was pretty funny.
Funny. But not as funny, Michael.
Yes.
As CISO.
Transition.
CISO has a library of stand-up television and original content that provides streaming laughs up to 1.7 megabarrels. You know, as in like a barrel of laughs.
Barrel, yeah, I get it.
You know. With CISO, you also get unlimited access to next day late night, British cult comedy, stand-up specials, and binge-worthy classics like all 42 seasons of SNL and the entire Monty Python catalog. It's all on demand. It's all ad-free. So whatever makes you laugh, CISO has something in its library just for you, and there's new content added all the time. This month, you can watch the UK imports like The Darkest Universe and Steve Coogan's Saxondale. Yes.
Sounds good.
Are you ready for the punchline?
I like Coogan. Yes. What is it?
I mean, this isn't hilarious, but maybe if I deliver it in a funny way.
Do it.
You can access CISO anytime, anywhere, on almost any device, including iOS, Android, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Windows, or Xbox One. And this is where I do the callback for $3.99 per month. No joke.
You know what? Sometimes comedy is just truth-telling.
Exactly. It's funny because it's true.
Exactly.
Less than $4 a month. That's like, that's worth one Monty Python viewing. Just go to CISO, that's CESO.com right now. Sign up for 2 weeks free using the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. That's CISO.com, spelled CESO.com, promo code MAJORITY. CISO.com, promo code MAJORITY. You will laugh, people.
It's true.
You will laugh. All right, we got to take a quick break. I just spoke to a Marcy Wheeler about half an hour ago, and we'll go to the take a break and we'll go to that interview. Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Marcy Wheeler. She is the proprietor and one of the posters at emptywheel.net. Marcy, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So let's start with, I guess, the latest on Comey and work backwards. We have now, it is clear, and I don't know if there was really a lot of controversy about this when it was first announced, but it's clear that the stories we were getting as to what prompted Comey's firing were not true.
Donald Trump really didn't much care about the way Jim Comey treated Hillary Clinton in the last days of the election that led him to win the election.
In fact, Rod Rosenstein apparently threatened to resign when he realized that his letter, which was requested of him to get his perspective on Comey's behavior, which, you know, frankly, I thought the letter was a fairly accurate assessment of Comey's behavior. But he did not understand that it would be the basis of Comey's firing. So working back from that, do we have a sense of why the timing took place now?
I think I'm as interested in the way in which Sally Yates's testimony precipitated the firing as anything else. Sally Yates and, frankly, James Clapper. Because what... Sally Yates' testimony wasn't as Sally Yates, for listeners, is former Deputy Attorney General. She testified on Monday how on January 26th, she went to the White House and said, your national security advisor has some serious problems. And at first, the White House was like, why are you intervening? And she was like, well, because we think he's susceptible to Russian blackmail. And then she went on the 27th. And said, here, you really need to take this seriously. Then they threw the Muslim ban at her. And then the following week, they said, we want to see the intelligence behind this risk of blackmail that our national security advisor is susceptible to. And then they fired her. And that was interesting for a couple of reasons. My favorite part of that testimony, or one of the most interesting comments that a senator made, was one that Al Franken made. Because one of the questions, and Adam Schiff, he's the head of the Democratic ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee, has been saying for a long time, Sally Yates is the one who can explain why there was a delay between her alerting the White House on January 26th and them waiting 18 days to fire Mike Flynn and letting him meet with all these heads of state and conduct all sorts of secret business in the interim. And Franken sort of said, well, maybe the reason Trump delayed in firing his national security advisor, Mike Flynn, who had been having these compromising conversations with the Russians, is because if he admitted that Flynn needed to be fired, then the other people who had conversations they were trying to hide with Sergei Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, and other Russians, then they might have to be fired. Then we might have to admit that they might be criminally liable for these conversations with the Russians as well. And that's when you get into interesting territory. One, because the two other big people on the list of Trump associates who hid conversations with the Russians are, one, Jeff Sessions, who lied to Al Franken in his confirmation hearing about whether he had had any conversations with the Russians. And even more interesting, Jared Kushner, right? So he was involved in some of those same conversations with Mike Flynn, with Sergei Kislyak, and then subsequently met with the head of a Russian bank that's sanctioned, that is being sanctioned for the invasion of Ukraine. There are these open questions about whether the bank was talking about funding the Kushner industries that are short on cash. And that would be, Trump Trump has no loyalty to anybody. He demands absolute loyalty from other people, but he has no loyalty to anybody except his family. And if his son-in-law, if the father of three of his grandchildren is going to end up being targeted by this investigation, he's going to start acting nuts.
And so the idea was, I mean, so do you think that, so in that scenario, and again, we're just speculating, this is all, you know, what else can we do at this point in terms of looking at this? But based upon...
Right, but what is not speculative is that Kushner had more sensitive meetings. I mean, you know, there's no allegation that Kushner was paid by Russians, although there is an allegation that he, or actually maybe one of the Trump sons, or maybe both, I forget. But there's no allegation that he was paid by the Russians, but he had, like, he didn't do any vetting process. You know, at least Flynn, we've got a long history of what he was doing for DIA.
Right.
Kushner, we don't know. And so that is the case, that he did not come forward with any of these conversations he was having with Russians. And that's not speculative. That is a problem. And he's already, you know, he's already a walking conflict because he's got his own business conflicts, Ivanka's business conflicts. Why the heck do we have the son-in-law of the president in, you know, this quasi chief
right.
of staff role?
Do you think Trump knew about Flynn's actions prior? I mean, the thing that I found interesting about the Sally Yates testimony was what they were doing on that second day. I mean, obviously, right? Don McGahn goes back and reports to Trump after the first day and says, either here's a revelation for you, Michael Flynn's been up to this, or here's a revelation for you, Sally Yates knows that Michael Flynn has been up to this, right? Like, we don't know how much Trump knew about Michael Flynn, but it seems like the whole second day was just about feeling out Sally Yates. Like, how far are you going to take this? Why are you asking us about this? Like, what is your role in this situation? I mean,
and then boom, 2 days later, she's fired.
Right. Cause they realize like, oh, your role in this situation is you're not on Team Trump. You're on maybe just not on Team Trump. You're just, you know, out there doing your job, and that's problematic.
Right. And she was doing her job there, which is, I mean, that was my favorite line from the entire testimony when she explained to Klobuchar, it's like, I just did my job. Like, that's
right.
What I was supposed to do. She was talking about both the Muslim ban. Why did she refuse to enforce the Muslim ban? Well, very good reason, because she could not ask her civil attorneys to go to judges and say, well, don't worry about it. It's not a Muslim ban in spite of the fact that President Trump has said 100 times that it's about Muslims. You know, that was why she refused to enforce the Muslim ban. But the way in which they come, really, you know, she had no warning about the Muslim ban. She had no warning as acting attorney general that basically the White House did something. This hasn't been made enough of, but in the Muslim ban, the White House did something very akin to what Dick Cheney did in 2001, when he went to OLC to get things approved without going through the proper channels. He went to John Yoo to get something rubber stamped. And in the case of the Muslim ban, they didn't tell OLC the things they needed to tell them. I mean, that generally happens. Like, you go in and you say, hey, can we keep people out of the country, without saying we want to do it because the president has been on a tear against Muslims for 6 months and
right.
got elected being, you know, a bigot.
So the OLC cannot make a proper assessment as to the legality of the law because they don't have all of the elements and the facts that went into the creation of the law.
Right.
So let me ask you this, too, about Sally Yates' testimony, if this struck you. We know that she was going to the White House because she saw the disparity between what the White House was saying Mike Pence was told, or what Mike Pence was saying he was told, and what Mike Flynn had actually done. So she said she was there, I think during the testimony, she said, I was there to let them know that he was lying, or she thought he was lying to Mike Pence, right? I mean, it's quite possible that just Mike Pence was telling a lie.
Right.
And We also know that Flynn must have lied to the FBI about his contacts, because Flynn could have said, yeah, I know, publicly we're not saying that I met with the Russians because we think it could be politically damaging, so this is just what we're doing. We're, you know, and if he had said that, right, I mean, if he had communicated to the FBI, maybe Sally Yates still would have gone over to the White House to back it up. But if he had said, like, look, this is, we are meeting with the Russians. I have been sent by the president to meet by the Russians or whatever, because we're trying to create better relations. And we're just not saying it publicly because we just don't think the public is there yet. And this happens all the time. We have secret negotiations and, you know, we did this with the Iran deal. We do this all the time. He must have not said, he must have said the opposite, essentially, to FBI investigators. Otherwise, Sally Yates would have no reason to believe that he had lied to Mike Pence and possibly to the president. So she wouldn't have gone over there. I mean, that was the blackmail thing. But she also was saying there was other underlying activities that she couldn't go into.
Yeah.
What, give me your sense of what that distinction and how important that was.
Well, and I agree. I mean, there was a ton of stuff at the hearing that made it clear that Mike Flynn lied to the FBI. The question is, what was the substance of Mike Flynn's multiple conversations with Sergei Kislyak, and to what degree was he helping? Was he delivering on promises to end sanctions, right? To what degree was he saying on December 29th, don't worry about these new sanctions, we'll overturn them in 3 weeks? But the other interesting thing, Friday there were these competing stories from Washington Post and the AP. I hope I get the AP attribution correct. And they revealed that one of the kind of non-crazy people in the administration was worried that Flynn wasn't taking Kislyak seriously enough. And he went to the CIA and said, hey, can we get the dossier on Kislyak so Flynn can be reminded? I mean, the guy's an old spy. I don't know why Flynn would need this warning, but so that he can understand who he's dealing with. And in the AP version of that story, so that the dossier on this ambassador gets dumped into the SCIF, which is a place to put secure documents and keep them secure, and nothing's supposed to go in or out of them, right? It gets dumped into this SCIF, and that's what the Washington Post story says. The AP story says, oh, by the way, Trump associates were copying stuff and taking them out of the SCIF. Now, there was no allegation that it was that dossier, but those two stories together, to me, said, was Flynn sharing classified information with Sergei Kislyak? I mean, that was the question that they raised for me, because if you're copying stuff and taking it out of a SCIF, first of all, you're doing far more than Hillary Clinton was ever accused to do with her email. So,
right.
You know, we can go back to Flynn saying she should go to jail, but you're also, the reason you don't take stuff out of the SCIF is because then you can show these top secret documents to people who are not cleared to see them. And some of the people you might share them with are people who are foreign agents. So that is, to my mind, the outside of where we might be talking here.
Hmm.
But again, you know, we know that and CIA was kind of weirded out that they were asked for only Sergei Kislyak's dossier. They turned it over. They were kind of like, WTF, mate. And so it is possible, for example, that Flynn did read it and said, hey, Sergei, you know, they think you're a spy. Ha ha, let's get rid of these sanctions. That, you know, obviously that would be troubling underlying behavior, right?
And there could be value, I guess, for Kislyak to see, you know, what are the sources that the CIA uses when they're creating dossiers on folks like me? I mean, so... Well, let me ask you this about Flynn, which just I still find sort of rather stunning. I mean, here he is. He was very high placed in the intelligence world, right, of our government at one point. Yet he seems to have no sense of what appear to me as a layperson without very much knowledge of this fairly basic capacities that our intelligence community has. Like the idea that they wouldn't be, I mean, it seems like it never occurred to Flynn that Kislyak would be monitored, right? I mean, would be surveilled in any way. Do I have that right? And is that weird?
Or maybe they're so arrogant. I mean, you know, the president has a great deal of authority to negate. I mean, Trump, let's be honest, you know, we are, whatever else we are stuck with Trump, he's incompetent, a lot of the stuff he does. Like if Dick Cheney were in this White House, the firing of Jim Comey would be so much better executed,
right,
that there wouldn't be this attention. So, you know, we have that at least. But,
but if Flynn was confident that he would never be held to account, he would need the confidence that, that Donald Trump would cover for him, right, in some way?
Right.
And where does that confidence come from?
If he had compromising information, say, on his son-in-law, if Jared Kushner is in the mix here, and he was definitely in the mix in those meetings,
right?
If Jared Kushner, if son-in-law is in the mix, then you've got a lot of leverage over Dabma. And I think, I mean, the other thing is that, I mean, one of the reasons Trump looks so incompetent is that he's just used to doing business the way businessmen and kind of a dodgy mobbed up business do business, which is, you know, twist arms, push things, demand loyalty, fire. And I think that Trump works with that assumption that he will be able to demand the same kind of responsiveness in the federal government that he was running a serially bankrupt, somewhat corrupt real estate business. And so I think that is where some of the arrogance comes from as well. I mean, you're right. I don't know what Flynn was thinking, but keep in mind, too, there were two allegations, at least one of which got to the inspector general level, and which James Mattis, by the way, the secretary of defense, intervened on and made sure that Flynn did not face problems. Flynn had serial problems with dealing with classified information already. Mm. Like, if Flynn had been held accountable to the, say, Hillary Clinton standard, it would have not just involved Obama saying, hey, don't hire this guy, he's bad news. It would have been much more not impossible. I mean, you know, John Brennan got hired after being involved in torture. So you can do a lot and still get hired into the White House, as it turns out. But yeah, I think it had Flynn been held accountable to his earlier problems with classified information, then I think you'd be in a different situation today. But nevertheless, yes. So he was already kind of arrogant, and people, you know, let's be honest, that people, like David Petraeus, did he go to prison for sharing code word documentation with his girlfriend and storing it in his desk drawer?
No, but he had done a lot for the country. I'm sorry.
But that's sort of the thing.
Right.
That's sort of the thing.
Right. And I guess there becomes this sort of this sense that we can get away. But I mean, it sounds like what Flynn has been up to on some level is a little bit more nefarious than what Petraeus was doing. I mean, you know,
Petraeus was trying to get laid, right?
Right, exactly. And on a very basic level, you know, he just comes off as a sad sack in some way. you know, it's like, maybe we should just give all of those guys, like, you know, a new red Corvette, and just that way they don't have to give highly sensitive documents to their would-be girlfriends. But all right, so if that's the case, so if Flynn was that confident, and maybe it was because he knew, like, if I go down, so doesn't Jared. What does that say about his, I mean, because when Flynn's lawyer had offered up this immunity thing, was that just a sort of a, this is what you do, you offer it as early as you can get, because, you know, you have the further down the process you go, the less leverage you have in terms of getting a good deal, because once they start to get convictions or mounting evidence, you have less leverage. Is that what was going on with that offer of immunity? Like, and prosecutors, we just don't need that right now?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, the DOJ has evidence that Flynn did not register, that Flynn did not tell DOD that he was getting payments from Russia. They have evidence that he lied to the FBI. You and I agree. And a lot of other evidence suggests. And that's before we get to whatever Sally Yates was talking about, the underlying behavior, which was problematic. So there are at least three kind of borderline crimes. I mean, lying to the FBI is big, but Petraeus got away with that, too. Those are three crimes that he can be charged with right away. And what they would do normally, and that's, again, ignoring the underlying behavior that Yates couldn't talk about. And so what normally happens in prosecutions is you charge him and you say, well, if you plead guilty, then, you know, we'll take that into consideration on sentencing, but you got to narc out Jared Kushner.
Right.
And so that is probably what the prosecutors and EDVA are thinking of right now. And there are those reports that there are a bunch of subpoenas going out to Flynn associates. You know, they what we've talked about, you would need to go tell a grand jury about all of the funding that he had gotten. You would have to tell, you know, bring in the DOD people who didn't get informed about him taking money from Russia. You would need to prove his intent that he was lying to Russia, lying to the FBI about his conversations with Russia intentionally. And that's what you would need to pretty much put Mike Flynn in a vice such that he would have it in his best interest to cooperate, to talk about the other Trump associates who might be compromised by Russia.
And presumably that's what's going on in, I think it's a Virginia grand jury, right? I mean, we saw that they're sending out subpoenas for Mike Flynn associates to try and figure out, you know, some of his financial questions. So what you started by saying that the timing of the Comey firing had to do with what that stuff that Sally Yates may have revealed. So what draw that line a little bit clearer for us. So why was it what Sally Yates said there? Did that create pressure? And whose pressure, who did that create pressure on? I mean, the story that we're getting now is that Donald Trump's been sitting around for like 2 weeks, you know, fuming about Comey. And I recall, I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, there was a day that Comey went to the White House. There was nothing reported really beyond the fact that he visited the White House. Nobody knew what they talked about. And I suspect it was one of those sessions where, you know, Trump was anticipating him telling more or whatnot, or, you know, being more effusive, and it didn't come. And that's maybe where it started with Trump. I've seen reporting too that says Trump and Sessions and even this guy, Rodstein, were upset that Comey would not give them a preview of his Senate testimony. What is it about what happened with Yates that may have impacted the timeline as to when Comey was going to go? Or who do you think was the impetus behind getting Comey out?
Well, I mean, Trump has also repeatedly hoped that Comey would exonerate Trump. Right. You know, in his bizarre letter,
three
he was
times.
Like, yeah, thank you for telling me three times that I'm not under investigation. But of course, if he said, am I under investigation? Trump, in his little lizard brain, would think, am I the collective me, including my son-in-law, Jared Kushner? Am I under investigation? Is any Trump property under investigation? And Jim Comey would use the legalistic definition of, are you the subject of the investigation? No, you aren't. But oh, by the way, your greasy son-in-law has done some dodgy things and he may be next, you know, that may be the subtext. And I just think, you know, Trump believes that anyone in government, that their role is to protect the president. And that gets really dodgy from, you know, we can't operate like that, to have the Department of Justice operating such that people are asked to protect the president first and foremost.
How much do you think, what's Jeff Sessions' involvement in all this? I mean, you mentioned that you had a piece, I guess it was yesterday, that James Clapper may have been referencing Jeff Sessions in terms of what I'm asking. Tell us about that, and where do you think Jeff Sessions is in all this? The guy who is so recused from this investigation that he only has the ability to fire the lead investigator.
So James Clapper and Sally Yates were both asked if they had unmasked the names of either members of Congress or Trump associates. And the short version is, if you do the math, then James Clapper's answer may have been C, both of the above, but I've only unmasked one person's name. So it's one of those kind of logic problems, mm-hmm. you know, like if so-and-so's father is so-and-so's son. If it's true that he has unmasked the name of a member of Congress and the name of a Trump associate, but only unmasked one name, then there are very few candidates. Richard Burr is one, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who is on an advisory committee. Devin Nunes, who acted so stupidly, who was a transition official and is now recused on the House Intelligence Committee from this investigation, but still chair of it. But the big one is Jeff Sessions, and it is highly likely that that is the person in question, because we know that Jeff Sessions had conversations with Kislyak. And what that means, if it is in fact, that's just a guess, but if, you know, this is sort of reading the tea leaves, if it is in fact the case that Clapper had to unmask Sessions's name, it would mean that the conversation, Kislyak's side of the conversation, his intent, his apparent goals in speaking to Sessions were such that Clapper had a concern about Kislyak's activities, not Sessions. And he was very clear about that in the hearing. But that would say, you know, that would explain why the leaks about Sessions' conversations with Kislyak came out. It would raise more questions about why he didn't disclose those conversations. It would raise more questions about whether he was honest about what he said to Kislyak. So that's what's interesting about that disclosure. You know, again, it's all tea leaves. There's no confirmation that's what happened. But yeah. So I, you know, and again, if going back to Al Franken's comment, Al Franken, who knew enough to ask Jeff Sessions if he had had any conversations with the Russians, and his take was, look, you know, maybe Trump didn't fire anybody because he realized if he set the precedent of firing people who are lying about the conversations with Sergei Kislyak, he's going to have to fire a bunch of other people. The first on that list, at least from Franken's perspective, would be the guy who lied to him in his confirmation hearing about the conversation he had with Kislyak, and that would be Jeff Sessions. So then we could get rid of Sessions, who's a horrible attorney general, and that would be a great start to things.
What, is it strange that the two members of Congress, or I should, well, you know, aside from Jeff Sessions, the two members of Congress who are also Trump associates, let me just clarify something. Is associates a specific term? I mean, is it?
You know, I'm sure there are some other members of Congress that I'm forgetting.
Okay.
The reason they have come up is because, yeah, they both were in charge of the investigation into Trump. And Trump made them associates at interesting times. You know, I was asking in August, I was asking about Burr in particular because he had a closer election than we expected last year. I was asking why Burr wasn't looking at the hack, at the DNC hack, but also at the shadow brokers hack, which is definitely related. And, you know, there was this guy releasing massive amounts of NSA documents, NSA hacking tools online, and sort of thought that was something that the Senate Intelligence Committee ought to have a review of, and never has happened as far, no public one. And that was the moment when Burr was put on Trump's advisory committee. So, you know, those kinds of, those are convenient things. I mean, it's obviously.
It's just weird to me that both the Senate and the House Intelligence Committee chairman happened to be, part of Trump's campaign fairly early on, relatively speaking.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, and when Clapper says that thing in that session, because I noticed there were some questions he'd answered that Sally Yates wouldn't, even though is there any signaling going on there? Is there any sort of like vague threats or just sort of like is Clapper just testifying, or is he testifying in such a way, even though he's sort of, I guess, ex officio, is he saying things as a way of trying to sort of corral certain people or to get certain people to do certain things or fear certain things?
I think Clapper, this is going to sound nuts because people like me are supposed to hate Clapper kind of categorically because of his not wittingly lie. And he made those jokes. Like, he used the not wittingly line two times in the hearing, which is his famous lie to Ron Wyden about whether millions of Americans were being collected on.
Right.
So he was, you know, and I also think, having watched him for years, I think he was just more relaxed than he's been for a very long time. I mean, he was so ready for retirement, and then he had this Russian thing explode at the end of his tenure. And so I do think that he was pretty excited to be done. So good for him. But, I think he was also being careful. I mean, I think he was trying to be as forthcoming as he could be. And he, by definition, can be more forthcoming than Yates because of the propriety around ongoing investigations. I mean, Yates is trying really hard not to make the Jim Comey mistake, right?
Right.
And she should. Like, no matter what you think about the Trump, I mean, this is something I think Democrats need to remember. No matter what you think about the Trump people, it is still possible, although diminishing possibility, that these Trump people are just incompetent and naive. Like,
right.
It's possible. It's possible that Trump is just, that has been doing mobbed up business with Russians forever and doesn't see the difference between that and being president, and that he needs a good kick in the pants and everything, you know. As I said, a diminishing possibility that is the case, but it is still possible. Whereas, like, and therefore, we should let the investigation proceed. We should be careful before we assume. You know,
and it's also important just to maintain these policies for just for other people. I mean,
when you and I get busted, right?
Exactly. I mean, honestly,
we should adhere to the same standards we want to adhere to other people. And
absolutely.
So, you know, I think it is fine to say, I think it is suspicious that Jared Kushner did not reveal any of his dubious conversations with Russians, and meeting with any sanctioned bankster is, I think, really dubious. But maybe he's just an idiot.
Right. And
we should never rule out that these people are just idiots.
In my experience, there's a lot of things that look like sort of intricate webs of conspiracy from the outside, where from the inside, it's just really just bumbling people who are just sort of trying to, save their skin or do the right, you know, not the right thing, but to enrich themselves at any given turn. Well, all right. So let me ask you this. Are we going to see now? I mean, prior to the recusal of Sessions, the supposed recusal, we saw, it seemed to me, like a cascade of leaks over the course of like a week and a half, where every night at 10:30 or 10 o'clock, the Post would have a story, and then 15 minutes later, the Times would have a story, and then the Wall Street Journal would have a story that would all just sort of bring in along in terms of, I think at that time it was, Jeff Sessions' meetings with Visliak. Are we going to see the same thing now until we see a special prosecutor?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, and that's another area where I'm actually somewhat sympathetic with the Trump people. I can think of one other case where the contents of a FISA order are leaked publicly, like they were with Flynn. And that is, you know, either we need to be a lot more public about who's getting FISA orders against them if they're Americans, or that needs to be somewhat sacrosanct, that you don't go leaking that somebody is the target of a FISA warrant, because a lot of people, a lot of innocent people do end up getting collected on under these national security things. And either we have them and we find potential Russian spies, which would be a good thing, or we don't have, you know, but if we have them and we are looking for Russian spies and we may, you know, investigate somebody and discover they're not a Russian spy, then making that public, I think, is a really terrible precedent. So Carter Page as well, like the fact that we know that we've been told Carter Page has a FISA order against him, that is bad. I'm actually really sympathetic with the Trump people that should not have been leaked. And the extent, you know, I keep thinking back to Comey's inability to stop the leaks against Clinton.
Right.
Right. And so Trump, one of the things he legitimately is trying to do is stop the leaks. He didn't care. He benefited from it. He wouldn't be president today if it weren't for, you know, the New York office of the FBI leaking like a sieve about Hillary Clinton and Anthony Weiner. But it is the case that we need to, you know, there are reasons to have some publicity, some visibility into what's going on with FBI investigations, especially into like people who might be president. But it is also the case that the leaking out of FBI has gotten just crazy. And sometimes that works against people who aren't rich and famous. You know, sometimes that happens all the time in terrorism cases against these, you know, 18-year-olds who are charged with terrorism crimes. And they are tried in the public sphere well before they get a lawyer. And that doesn't lead to justice either. So, you know.
Let me ask you this. Can we make that determination now? In other words, is it if 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, we realize that there was a concerted effort to suppress the investigation, that there was a concerted effort to cover up. Doesn't that leaking become whistleblowing at that in that context? And is that something that we need some measure of hindsight to make an assessment of?
Well, I also think that I might better describe it as creating the remember that Jim Comey did not brief even Congress on the fact that there was a counterintelligence investigation into Trump's people until March.
Until Sessions was recused.
Well, until Sessions was recused and until Flynn was gone, because both would have had to be briefed along the process.
And Comey clearly didn't trust Devin Nunes for not going and telling Sessions, right? I mean, it seemed to me that the timing of that was specifically because whoever leaked this information to make sure that Sessions had to recuse himself, and then Comey felt comfortable revealing to congressional leaders, you know, like 3 months after he had been first asked, 4 months, it seems to me, right? I mean, they were meeting with him in December. And he only did that because he knew that, or he thought he was untouchable because now Sessions was recused. And so, I mean, to me, that sounds like a form of whistleblowing, right? Where it's like, we need to leak this to maintain the integrity of a process, and there's no other mechanism for which we can, you know, allow this investigation to proceed.
Yeah, but by the same token, I mean, a lot of the leaking about the investigation into Trump's people reportedly alerted Russian targets that they were being surveilled and led them to change their communication methods. So it is, I mean, the one other case I know of where a standing FISA order was leaked to the press was in 2009 when Pete Hoekstra did it with regards to Anwar al-Awlaki. And al-Awlaki then adjusted his methods. He started talking to including Americans, but Westerners about maybe attacks. And he learned to subvert the efforts to collect on him. So, you know, I'm sympathetic both ways.
Right.
I sound like a kind of hawk, don't I?
Yeah, total apologist.
Something
for
in my coffee this morning.
But look,
on this Russian, investigation, I think people, Democrats underestimate. I mean, they're happy to say 20 dead bodies, right? There are maybe two or three that might definitely be tied to this investigation. They always seem to forget that there are several people who've been charged in Russia with treason, that if that's the case, we basically lost two or three good spies in Russia because of the publicity surrounding the case. And so I get the need to push for some kind of resolution on this case. I really do. But I also think that Democrats need to remember that people can die if there's too much the kind of investigation that the FBI investigators in D.C. are doing is a dramatically different kind of investigation into what happened with Hillary Clinton's email server.
Right.
A, because it's a lot more serious, but B, because contrary to what you might believe from the right-wing press, Hillary really wasn't going to kill anybody because of her email server. And that's not the case here. It's just not.
Well, you said that, not me. But all right, so do you think? Okay,
I mean, I'm not saying Trump's going to kill anybody. No. But you know, right?
I think, you know, it depends on. As president, there's a certain inevitability. He's already probably, but not as it pertains to these particular issues that we're talking about. But two more things. One, do you think the investigation is going to continue unfettered regardless of who gets appointed FBI director? And two, just to roll this in, there was a report by ProPublica that Comey misstated the amount of emails on Wiener's laptop. Was that relevant at all? Was there any relevance to that, or was it just, you know, I mean, because
it was relevant, but I thought that there had already been a move to correct that.
The FBI was looking to figure out how to correct it. But the question is like, you know, who gave Comey that information in the first place?
Yeah, and I think that is relevant. I think Comey may have been lied to when he reopened the investigation into Hillary, and I think that that's worth. But the other thing is, Comey also suggested that there's something else, some other conflict within DOJ on the Hillary investigation that will come out with the IG report. So, you know, I think there are a couple of questions with regards to his handling of the Hillary case, which is indefensible in any case, right? Like Comey's treatment of the Hillary case is indefensible. But we should remember that we should apply the same standards we want Hillary to have been treated with to people in the Trump administration who may be sleazy, but, you know, whatever, take the high ground. But I think that was relevant. I think, I mean, having reread the transcript later in the day, he did partly correct what he said wrong during the course of the hearing. He said, oh, I didn't mean there were thousands of classified emails. I meant there were thousands of emails. But I want to know who briefed him, because I think that the metadata should have already told the investigators there wasn't going to be anything new. And I think that the investigators wanted to reopen that data to have access to the data in a way that was clean from the assurances that had been made to Hillary's people as part of the email investigation, right? So in other words, it gave a virgin birth of the same emails associated, but because it came in through the Wiener campaign, because they wanted to go after the foundation.
Right. I mean, it seems to me I wouldn't be surprised if it was Anthony Wiener looking at his wife's email account, right? She signs in one time, he goes back in, signs in, gets all the emails, because he's he's out of show business, and he wants to know what's going on, essentially, based upon, you know, nothing other than just sort of like the perspective we have on Anthony Wiener. He strikes me as that type of guy, frankly, but who knows?
Yeah, right.
So lastly, what happens with the investigation going forward with the FBI, the work they're doing?
Who knows? You know, I think, you know, that there is some lack of clarity about whether Comey had asked for more money or more prosecutors to be dedicated to the case. I also think there's some interest in, and we know that there's a bunch of stuff going on in Maine Justice and EDVA. I actually have some concerns about the way that Dana Bente, who is the single U.S. attorney in the country right now, who is the U.S. attorney for EDVA and therefore in charge of both parts of the Russian investigation, but also the investigation into WikiLeaks. And he is now about to become the acting Assistant Attorney General for National Security Division, which means he approves things like FISA warrants. And
so just
I
to catch people up, EDVA is the Eastern District of Virginia, and that's the only U.S. attorney, or, you know, as opposed to acting U.S. attorneys around the country because they have not been replaced.
Right, they've all been fired. So he didn't get fired because he was acting deputy attorney general.
Right.
Once Rosenstein got approved, then he's all set to become the acting NSD. And just as an example, I mean, I know that a lot of your listeners want WikiLeaks to be fried, and I'm sympathetic with that view to a point. But the precedent to be set by prosecuting, I mean, if there's not more evidence than what we know exists, or if they are not taking an approach, if they are not using WikiLeaks' involvement in Snowden's flights, if they are not basing a prosecution of WikiLeaks on either evidence we haven't seen yet or on helping Snowden, helping a fugitive escape, then I think the precedent in prosecuting WikiLeaks is really terrible.
Right.
And to have that decision be made by Dana Bente, who's been going after WikiLeaks for at least 4 years, with him being the superior who would approve his decision to go after them. See what I mean?
Yes, he's both.
So he
puts in a request to charge WikiLeaks on A or B, and then he walks across the desk and signs it, takes a look, this looks good.
Bingo.
In order to me. Here you go. You got the approval.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And I think that given the precedents involved, particularly there, I mean, I've covered some of the cases Bente has pursued. He is a very, very aggressive prosecutor. As somebody who thinks our prosecutions go a little too far sometimes, I'm not crazy about that. He's very, the EDVA, for those who don't know, obviously it's where CIA is, it's where the Pentagon is, it's where a bunch of other, where the Director of National Intelligence, it's where most of our spooks are. And so that division has a bunch of precedents, and also the jury pool. I mean, it's like you can assume anybody in a jury pool in that district is going to be at least sympathetic with keeping classified information. And so that's what Mike Flynn is up against.
Interesting.
Those are the people who, if he gets charged, will be the jury of his peers. They actually will be his peers, right? Because those are the kind of people he worked his entire career with. And they'll be like, dude, what the heck were you doing having these conversations with Sergei Kislyak? That's
right,
crazy. But understand that that's the environment we're talking about in EDVA. And Dana Bente is a very aggressive prosecutor. If that may serve us really well in the Russian case. And that's not where the only parts of the Russian investigation are. There are parts in San Francisco and in Pittsburgh, actually. And so there are some interesting questions about how those will get spun out. But the EDVA one, which is what we're all focused on, which is the Trump officials one and also the WikiLeaks one, people should expect, unless something happens to Dana Bente, people should expect, if anything, a prosecution that is too aggressive, if that's possible, you know. But that's not, you know, Bente could be fired tomorrow.
Yeah, that seems I would imagine if we see anybody else in the investigative sort of apparatus get fired anytime soon, we're in special prosecutor world, it seems to me. If not independent counsel, that would be legislative, and I don't know. I think there's one. As a Comstock, and maybe and she came from the DOJ, but she is now calling for a special prosecutor, first Republican to do so, in my estimation, as far as I can tell. So,
is she calling for a special prosecutor or a independent commission?
I got to double check on that, but I thought it was a special prosecutor.
Okay.
But I will double check on that by the time this airs. Oh wait, here it is. There must be an independent investigation that people can trust. So it's not, I guess from that statement, it could be sort of vague.
Right.
But Nevertheless, there's a slight movement in that direction. She is in trouble. She is facing a tough re-election. So this is where it's going to come from. But
one of the reasons I asked is because my congressman, who people hate when it comes to health care or budgets, Justin Amash, is one of the Republicans who's always been opposed to Trump, and he's also said he's putting together legislative language on an independent commission, which is not necessarily the best approach forward. But, there are other I think Jeff Flake is getting closer, who, you know, to
what do you think the best approach forward would be?
I'm still not convinced. Look, there are no U.S. attorneys except for Dana Bente. So by definition, any special counsel, anything akin to what we've had since the special prosecutor law was eliminated.
That was the Ken Starr law, essentially.
Basically. So that person would have to be an assistant U.S. attorney. The last one, so Pat Fitzgerald is not an option anymore. He's in the private sector. And so to bring him in, you'd have to pass legislation to make it cool for him as a private sector employee or rehire him. And I don't think Trump's going to do that. Mm. So then you're looking at, you know, what assistant U.S. attorney would you trust with this investigation? And would they be an improvement on Dana Bente, who is the only U.S. attorney in the country? And I don't know that the answer is yes. I don't know that there's an assistant U.S. attorney out there that is going to be better at holding up to the pressure of Trump than Dana Bente.
Fair enough. Marcy Wheeler, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. I hope you're not late for lunch.
I'm okay. Thanks. Good to talk to you, Sam.
Thank you, Marcy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. That was a long one, but she's... I don't know if there's anybody who is more well-versed and thoughtful about this stuff certainly not that I'm aware of.
Deliberative
and just incredibly well-versed and level-headed about it. So if I have the opportunity to talk to her for 40 minutes, I will do it.
Even 51 minutes.
Or in certain instances, 51 minutes. Generally 40, but 51. Look, I was just priming the pump. One of the things I came up with. And she told me I was not under investigation 3 times. We do now have a revision to the revision of the revision of why James Comey was fired by Donald Trump. We will play that clip in the fun half of the program. We're also going to play that clip of, and it's a good thing we didn't get Hillary Clinton in there, because otherwise you'd probably end up seeing like Henry Kissinger at the White House. We will also play a clip of Henry Kissinger at the White House.
Whoever is there.
Betsy DeVos was greeted, I think, in the way that she should be greeted, not just at commencement hearings, but anywhere she goes.
At the grocery store. If she even goes to grocery stores.
And, yeah, exactly. We got all that. And
at multi-level marketing conferences with her husband.
Got some great clips of what it's like to go on vacation at South Padre Island if you're not a white person. And also, speaking of white people, in Nolens, they tore down the statue of Jefferson Davis, the well-known, it's treason when you try and secede. But
I don't know if Jeff sees it that way.
It's a war rebellion. That's what I was saying.
but I think we can all agree, not very competent guy. Not good. Chaos. And so they tore that statue down in New Orleans. We'll get to all that. But folks, let me just remind you, it is your memberships that make this show possible. You and only you. Specifically you. I'm talking to you. Your memberships make this show possible. To become a member, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. And as a way of saying thank you, we give you bonus material every single goddamn day.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
You're all ungrateful. Hello? This is Sam Cedar. I hate my audience so much, but give me money. Thank you. If I could rub some shekels together to talk about the news, I won't be mad. But I am, because I work so hard. But at the same time, all I want to do is do this. Just yak and yak and yak.
It's true. It's very complicated, folks. If you are one of those people, however, who cannot afford it and wants the bonus content, by all means, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Bear with us, as sometimes it takes us a while to get to emails. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get the 10% off of your coffee, and you can get the Majority Report blend, which is delicious. And if you own a coffee shop, look into it as getting it as your house coffee. They did that up at a place up in Hudson. Janine Garofalo is up there getting a movie. She walked in, saw the coffee. Getting a movie. She was renting a movie. She went up to Hudson.
Oh, they rent movies up in Hudson? Okay.
She was shooting a movie up there. She was shooting a movie.
Hello, can I get a movie?
Sorry.
get all your movies from Just Coffee. I'm tired, folks. And
really?
MajorityReportKickback.com. Well, you know, last night, first of all, Saul's
yes,
not going to bed.
Yes, Rachel.
Right? Everybody's heard
yes,
this.
Yes, Saul doesn't let you sleep.
He doesn't go to bed. And then
everything.
I can end up watching Brian
yes,
Williams, for God's sake.
Brian
and
Williams,
it's just,
MSNBC, oof. You're on with Hayes, you're jeez. Tired, Nikki, your daughter, no, we get it. Go to the front half.
MajorityReportKickback.com. If you buy stuff from Amazon, you buy stuff from Jet.com, buy it through our affiliate link available there. Figure out some special way in which you can always go there easily, but I'm not allowed to say the word. Have you read any good books lately, Mark? Oh, your name's Michael. I'm sorry. All right. Not so dumb. See you in the fun half.